Today's episode is about a domestic violence case. If you or someone you know is dealing with domestic violence, please call the Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233 or text START to 88788. Everyone deserves a relationship free from domestic violence.
Hey, everybody.
This is Kim.
And this is Kel. And you're listening to Shiny Things. Oh, it's been a minute, Kim.
It has, because we actually gave you the week off.
I appreciate that. And I'm sorry I haven't had a chance to even listen yet, but it's on my list for tomorrow morning to listen to on the ride to work. So I'm very, very excited.
Well, you should. It was a good episode.
Yeah, because nobody will interrupt me either in the car.
You,
so
you know what's good about having somebody right in your back pocket is if somebody gets caught up in a jam, you always have that other person to co-host with you. So it was nice working with him, but I missed you.
Yeah, and that's how I feel too. Like when I did the episode with the Crime Time Nerds, so it's like I like venturing out because then it gives the other one a break, but I always want to come back home.
Now, Kelly, my memory, the one you did with the Crime Time Nerds, what was that about?
That was the Dyatlov Pass, or the Dyatlov, and it was where these hikers in Russia, this was like a level 4 hiking trip, which is like nothing to sneeze at, and they were supposed to come back at a certain time. Nobody heard from them. And then officials went out looking after the storm had passed and they found the bodies of all of these students at this site because they had gotten a little off kilter. So they were in a different spot than expected. And they all had like weird things. Like some of them, their clothes had radiation. Some of them, you know, like was all these weird happenstances against like the bodies, and some of them had like a traumatic force. And then I won't give it away in case people want to go back and listen, but they have an idea of what happened that night, and they actually, the way they tested it or like put models onto the computers, is they went to the animators of Frozen, my jam, and learned how to make models of the ice and the snow and how it would move, because of they were did such a good job animating that movie when Elsa's up on the hill with all the snow and stuff. So they had a bunch of scientists go and learn the coding for it, and then they kicked around some theories. So it was pretty cool.
It sounds, I do remember it, but I like your description of it. That was a true story, based on a true story, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm gonna go back. You know, there's so many of them that we did that I really enjoyed, that I'm gonna start going back and re-listening to them. Even though I don't like the sound of my own voice, I do like the stories.
I will not lie, I listen to the Mad Gap bit.
Oh, that's because you like to talk about farts.
I couldn't stop laughing.
Oh my god. You're so trash.
I am.
But you know what? Today's case isn't really a laughing matter, but it does bring a lot of awareness to domestic violence. So the case today we'll be discussing happened on March 9th, 1977. When an abused and battered woman set fire to the bed her live-in ex-husband was asleep in, and resulting in death.
Ooh, shit.
Yeah. So the outcome of the trial is going to be very shocking, and it may or may not sound justified to you, but in order to fully make everyone understand, I'll need to take everyone way back from the very beginning. So the story's about Francine Moran. She was born in Stockbridge, Michigan on August 17th, 1947. She was actually named after a French musician that her mother was very fond of. Now, I'm guessing her mom was a stay-at-home mother, And I'm assuming that because most women back in the 40s didn't have their own career. They actually were stay-at-home mothers. That was their career, to take care of their children, the household, and their husband. The father, however, was a farm worker, and he was an abusive alcoholic.
Ugh.
So anyway, Francine often wondered why her mother put up with this abuse, and one day she asked her mom just that, and her mother replied by saying, "You do what's best for your husband." Now remember, I know what you want to say something there.
Me too. But
now, remember, back then, divorce really wasn't an option. It was basically taboo. So when you say "I do" during this time, and regardless to what the situation is, whether you're being treated properly or you're being abused, women often were very submissive and often thought they deserved whatever treatment their husband handed down. Traditional families in the 40s were much different than they are now, with the stay-at-home mom who tended to domestic matters such as cooking and cleaning and caring for children. The traditional view was that wives were helpers to their husbands, subservient in most instances. I'm not saying every instance was like that, but in most it was.
Right.
Unlike today's marriages or relationships, if you will, that don't typically fit that out-of-date conception. In healthy relationships, partners are equal, and interracial and same-sex marriages were unheard of.
Yeah, that's true. We have come a long way.
We have, because there isn't a cookie cutter to a relationship now.
No, you love who you love. Exactly. And it doesn't matter who that person is, or, you know. I won't get on that soapbox, but...
No, I get what you're saying. It doesn't matter, you know, if they're male or female, same sex, transgender, what have you. It doesn't matter, as long as you love someone.
And as long as they're equally kind and loving.
Exactly.
Because so, that's... Yeah.
I'm sorry, I interrupted.
No, that's okay. Yeah, it's just... You often see that, especially, well, you can go on and talk about it later. I'm sure you'll bring it up.
So when Frances was 16, she actually dropped out of high school and married the man of her dreams, or so she thought. His name was James Mickey Hughes. And for this story, I'm going to call him Mickey because that's what his nickname was.
Oh, okay.
Frances was looking forward to the beginning of a happy life with Mickey, but much to her surprise, he turned out to be just like Francine's father. Her dream was a nightmare. And though the abuse escalated throughout the marriage, the couple went on to have four children, Christy, James, Dana, and Nicole. Mickey continued his abusive behavior towards Francine. And even though I didn't find any evidence that he abused the children, the physical and mental abuse he, you know, handed down to their mom throughout her life, to me, that's child abuse.
Right.
He may not have physically abused them, but I think it's safe to say he subjected them to witnessing their mother's physical and psychological abuse for their whole entire life. In my opinion, even if he never raised a hand to them, he abused them.
Right, because it's now it's a learned behavior too. You know what I mean? So for like their son, it's, you know, it's okay to treat women like this because they'll stay. And for girls, it's like, okay, well, I have to do this if I don't want this to happen. And you're things exactly like that.
It is learned behavior.
Right, and it drives me. I mean, we would still see these cyclical things today with, you know, that's why they have a whole show called Snapped. You know what I mean? Like it's just cyclical and it sucks, but sometimes you can't see the forest through the trees. You have to step back.
You're exactly right. So after 13 very long years of enduring this abuse, Francine decided she had taken as much as she was going to take, and she and the children moved out of the family home. She and Mickey divorced in 1971, which you're thinking, oh, yay, happy ending. Well, not so much. Mickey was involved in a serious auto accident, and even though they were divorced, he moved back in with her and the children. Why, you ask? During the trial, Francine testified that even though she was reluctant to have him move back in, she didn't feel as if she could refuse him because she didn't want to hurt him more than he was already hurt in the auto accident.
Fuck that guy.
I know. She was basically home free, and then he must have asked her, can I move back in?
Right, because there's, you know, I have a, what some people call a strange relationship, and Azrael's father and I have a, you know, personally, we have a great relationship as friends and things like that. We're just, you know.
I don't find that strange at all. I think that's the most healthy I've heard.
So, you know what I mean? Like, if he were ever in an accident, God forbid, or something like that, that would be a situation where I would, you know, happily let him stay with us and help and things like that. So, you know what I mean? It's like, so, but I wasn't in that situation where he beat the shit out of me every day.
I was just going to say, Kelly, Mark wasn't an abusive man.
He's a pretty good guy.
So, the abuse continued, and if even possible, it escalated over the years after Mickey's recovery. He went right back to his excessive drinking and abusing, often choking Francine out during one of his many rages. He often destroyed furniture, ripped foam wires out of the wall to prevent anyone from calling the police. In one of his rages that I read about, he also strangled his daughter's kitten. I knew that was going to get you. Animals are so innocent and helpless, especially an animal as small as a kitten. So by the time I read about him killing this kitten, I decided Francis had done the world a favor.
Yeah, fuck that. Like, you burn that motherfucker to the ground, because that's how serial killers start out, torturing young things. And his daughter had nothing to do with what was going on between him and Francine. Like, you leave animals and your freaking kids out of it.
Yeah, I really wonder what was going on in his head to make him think it's okay to physically and mentally abuse his own wife and children, but then to kill a kitten?
Right. I wonder if he had one of the other red flags. I wonder if he had a traumatic brain injury from the accident.
I don't know, Kelly, because he was doing all this shit before he had the accident.
But it sounded like it ramped up.
It did. They did say it escalated, but the tendencies were already there. So I think you can't just blame it on the accident.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Like, I think the accident may have helped spark the total overall change. But yeah. We can never tell, because, you know, some people say you bump your head and your whole personality can change. And then other people are like, no, it only changes if it's like your brain is crushed during an accident or something. So nobody really knows for sure. But I just know that killing animals and brain injuries are usually on the list of how people end up in jail for killing people.
Mm. So much time passed for Francine and her children, and they all deserve, I think we can all agree that they deserve a happy life.
Mm-hmm.
So after much contemplation, Francine relented and sought the help of a professional, but it was anything but. They didn't help her at all. Allegedly, Francine was instructed on how to be more assertive in these situations, and was given a prescription for tranquilizers. She was told the medication would help her stay calm during Mickey's abusive rages. Unbelievable. But during this time, there wasn't a lot of women coming forward, and there wasn't a lot of resources for them like there are now. I know, really. Here's a tranquilizer so you can stay calm when he punches your face in.
How about you put the whole container of tranquilizers in his soup?
Yeah.
And see what happens. Like, are these people serious?
Now remember, this was in the 70s.
Even then, that was the time of love, man.
I know. Not so much for a battered wife, apparently.
No, like, here, you take these, so it'll be... It's almost like telling somebody to drive drunk. And like, because if you crash, you'll be way more relaxed.
And she's going there for help, thinking that she's going to get help. And she must have felt like she was completely helpless and out of options. Now, remember, Francine never pressed charges on Mickey any of the times that he beat her up. She thought if she did, it would escalate the dynamics of the situation, and that would make it even worse. Maybe killing her or her worst nightmare would come true, and he would hurt the children. See, that's what a mother is and does. She puts her kids' welfare in front of her own, and that's what Francine was doing.
Right.
So she took his abuse to protect her own children. So she contemplated her next steps and said, basically, if she attempted to get him removed from the house, he'd surely kill her, since he had made constant threats about doing that. She was basically caught between a rock and a hard place, but still had the spark left in her. Mickey hadn't stolen. So instead of accepting this life, she decided to enroll in the GED program. Because remember, she had dropped out of school to marry this asshole.
Oh, that's right.
So she got back into the GED program, and then she received her GED, and then she enrolled in secretarial courses.
Oh, which, good for her.
You know what? That good for her, because now she's trying to plan an exit.
Right.
So March 9th, 1977, started like most days. She got up, made the children breakfast, and sent them off to school. And then she went off to her classes. So this one particular day, she arrived home from class. She found Mickey highly intoxicated, and he was ready for a fight. He ripped the books out of her hand, and I'm not sure if he made her do it or he did it, but her books were burned, whatever was left of them. And he continued his berating of her, and told her basically that she was a loser, she was a dropout because she dropped out of high school, calling her a failure and other things. Just a lot of verbal beatings. And then once he bored of verbally accosting her, he went on to hit her in the head repeatedly and then raped her for hours. And yes, people, your husband can rape you. I'm not saying he's allowed to. I'm saying it's still rape because no means no.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not sure who called the police. Maybe it was Francine, but I'm not sure if this was the time where the phone wires had been pulled out of the wall. Or maybe a neighbor, because the children were at school still. But two officers arrived at the residence, and after speaking to both her and Mickey, they refused to bring Mickey to jail, since they hadn't witnessed the violence firsthand.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I am not kidding you, Kelly. Can you imagine?
That is some bullshit.
Because nowadays, you don't even have to press charges on your husband or your wife. Because domestic violence goes both ways.
Right, yeah. I mean, women kick the shit out of their...
Yep.
Significant others all the time, too.
And nowadays, you don't have to press charges. The police will do it for you.
Well, that, and then, like, if she was hit several times in the head, I'm sure there was some pretty rough, gnarly, like, bumps and bruises and some bleeding to some extent. You know what I mean? Like, that would be like me rolling on up to your house and like obviously gotten like hit in the face with a branch or something and like pretending like it didn't happen.
Right. See, like back then it was almost like how a man controlled his household was his business. So unless you were basically dead, the police weren't doing anything. So after all that, I mean, if she felt defeated before, she had to have felt completely like done at that point. Like she was feeling like, I can't, nobody's helping me. I've tried. The police won't even help me. This is my lot in life, basically.
Right.
So after that, Francine tried to make dinner for the kids, but Mickey became enraged because he didn't give her permission. She didn't ask permission first. So he threw the food on the floor and forced Francine to her hands and knees to clean it up, threatening her life with a knife in front of her children the entire time. And then, after she had cleaned up the entire kitchen, you know what that fucker did? He overturned the trash can onto the floor and forced her to clean it up again, and hitting her until she said she'd quit school. After completely humiliating Francine, he made her cook dinner again for the whole family. And then after she did so, he took Francine to the bedroom and once again raped her until falling into a drunken stupor.
I would have stabbed that motherfucker.
I think there's no doubt that you would have done that, Kelly.
You kick that knife out of his hand with a roundhouse kick to the face. And then you say, all right, well, self-defense, bitch. Bam. Yep. That's bullshit.
So that was her defining moment. Francine snapped. Basically, she was taking no more. Until Mickey fell asleep and instructed the children to get their coats on and wait for her in her car. She got a can of gas from the garage and went back to the bedroom where her sleeping, abusive, drunken husband lay and stood over him for a minute. Francine recalled all the pain he had inflicted on her and her children over the years and heard the words, "Do it," repeatedly in her head, and she did it. She poured the gas on Mickey in the bed and lit one single match and fled the house before it engulfed in flames. She then drove away from the house and straight to the police station and turned herself in. By the time the firefighters arrived at the house, it was too late. I'm glad it was too late.
Oh, yeah. This fucker.
The house had burned to the ground and Mickey was pronounced dead at the scene. I believe it was from smoke inhalation, because most fire victims die from smoke inhalation before they are consumed by the flames, but don't quote me on that. I'm not an expert. Personally, after reading about Mickey, I say who cares how he died as long as he did.
Well, that was the thing. It was like the cops literally let him beat the shit out of her and rape her for hours, and they're like, yeah, there's nothing we can do about it because we didn't see it.
Exactly. So,
and then how could they accuse her? Like, they didn't see her light the match. Well, she's just telling them a story.
Well, anyway, though, but she actually confessed to the murder. So it really wasn't a no-brainer. It was a no-brainer that she would be charged with murder. She admitted to it. She tried to hide it.
Well, I think that, what do they call it? Justified homicide?
Well, we're going to get to that, Kelly. So during the trial, Francine's two oldest children testified in their mother's defense, saying that their father had broken furniture and told them about the phone wires being pulled out of the wall and how he threatened her with a knife many, many times and how he physically abused her in front of them. Plus, the two officers that had been called to the home prior also testified that Francine had appeared to have been physically abused by Mickey, and they actually heard him threaten her life. Now, to me, living in today's world, nothing knowing that those two officers heard this threat and did nothing is outrageous. And I do realize that it was a different time. But if they handled the situation as domestic violence is handled nowadays, Mickey would be alive and he'd be the one on trial and possibly prison. He wouldn't be dead. It really gets me, but I'm glad things have changed since then. The officer testified under oath that Francine appeared to have been physically abused, and yet they had done nothing. Nowadays, the officers would be brought up on charges and terminated. Serve and protect. Isn't that the oath?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that was about 50 years ago, so it kind of puts things into perspective and shows how much progress has been made in domestic violence cases. Francine's attorney made it clear to the jury that Mickey was a constant wife beater that threatened her life on multiple occasions during and after their marriage. The jury of 10 women and 2 men found Francine not guilty by reason of temporary insanity, which, by the way, was the first successful case that used a battered women's defense. Francine's case became a turning point in the movement against domestic violence. Now, up until this time, there weren't many shelters for battered women to turn to. But because Francine's trial and best-selling book and movie made based on her life and the tragedy that she had endured during this marriage helped in the movement. Do you remember the book and the movie, The Burning Bed?
I have not read the book, and I watched the movie a long time ago, but I'm definitely going to go back and watch it now.
I know, I said that too. The movie pushed the narrative that police and social services should pursue more aggressive policies that prevent spousal abuse. And the year the movie was televised, the number of shelters in the country increased by approximately 700 in 1 year.
Wow.
So anyway, in 1980, Francine was asked to describe her mental status during this whole time period with Mickey, you know, the whole time that they were married. And basically she said for so long she just took it because she thought that's what you were supposed to do when you were married and thought, what did she do wrong? And then she said, you basically lose yourself in the whole situation. Went on by saying that she felt beaten down and scared and felt like there was no hope. After years of being beaten and abused, she really had no other place to turn. So, seems like it was a happy ending, because Francine went on to marry a country and western singer named Robert Wilson, and went on to get her LPN and graduated valedictorian of her class. March 22nd, 2017, at the age of 69, she passed away from pneumonia.
Hmm.
Yep. Francine will always be remembered for the impact her case had on domestic violence.
Oh, I wouldn't have even given her insanity. I would have just said self-defense.
I think they couldn't do self-defense only because at the time of the attack, basically, he was asleep.
Oh, that's right.
So, I mean,
but she knew he was going to wake up and he was going to do to her what he already done, so.
It's sort of like the episode we did recently.
Yes.
Where she killed her daughter's attacker and she didn't run away or try to get out of it. You know, right is right and wrong is wrong. And when you see something that you just don't think is quite right, even as an outsider or somebody, a stranger, if you see something that you think isn't right or rubs you the wrong way, you need to say something. And if you're wrong about it, then you're wrong. But isn't it better to be wrong and have somebody safe than to not say anything because you're embarrassed or you're afraid that you're wrong? And what, God forbid, have that person killed?
Well, that, and then it's like, it makes me think to these, there's been a couple of stories in the past, like, 10 years where women have actually had to change the way that, like, the lady that called the pizza place, or she said she was ordering pizza, but she called 911 and she started ordering a pizza. And the 911 person's asking her the questions, are you being hurt? Is the person in the room with you? And things like that. So it's even first responders, you can see that there's been a change in it.
Oh, definitely.
And
I'm so happy, I'm blessed to have such a wonderful husband that's never, ever lifted a hand to me or verbally abused me. But a lot of women don't have it that good.
Right. And in the time of COVID, child abuse and domestic violence have skyrocketed.
Which is very sad.
I mean, well, when you're stuck inside with your tormentor and that tormentor gets bored, because a lot of kids, school's a release. They go to school and,
Yeah. No.
And for the women too, like they go to work and that's their escape.
And, even though, domestic violence, the resources that people have nowadays has improved so much since the 70s, there's still room for improvement.
Oh, yeah. Because and people don't think about stalking as domestic violence. But I consider it domestic violence because, typically that used to be like a partner or a friend or something like that. And a lot of times, and it's different in every state in the U.S., the stalking laws, but a lot of times these people lose their lives because of things that they're like, oh, the technicalities of like, well, we can't do that. Or that's fine that you think he said that, but you didn't do this. So it's almost like they're blaming the victim.
Yeah.
And I think that's where a lot, and there is that fear that that person is, like she said, she's like, he would kill me if I tried to call the cops on him. Because I wouldn't have called the cops again either if I were her, simply because the last time they were called, they came to the house and like, we can't do anything for you. So you call and you tell them this guy's trying to kill me and they show up. It's like, and that's what it used to be, a conversation during that time too, where the cops would show up and that both people would be in the room. Now everybody gets separated.
Yep.
And I feel really bad for police because domestic violence calls actually claim the lives of a lot of policemen every year and women.
How so, Kelly?
Because they walk into these situations where there's weapons involved. You don't know what you're walking into and stuff like that. So a lot of times if the guy's got a gun and he's not happy, he'll shoot or stab at them and things like that. So, people I know that were cops, they said that the scariest calls were always the domestic violence calls because you didn't know what you're walking into. They'd rather walk into a bank robbery than a domestic violence call.
Because you know what you're getting in a bank robbery.
Right.
And
you know me, I like with road rage, I'm like, you have to know that you're crazier than that fucker. If you're going to beep at him and flip him off, you got to know that you're crazier.
Right.
And it's the same way with domestic violence. It's like, not that women should be meek. They need to defend themselves and stuff like that. But if somebody's in that kind of rage, they're in a totally different plane than the rest of us.
It's a terrible thing. So once again, I'm going to repeat that number.
Mm-hmm.
If you or someone you know is dealing with domestic violence, help out your fellow human by calling the domestic hotline at 1-800-799-7233 or text the word START to 88788.
This show is a part of the Quite the Thing Media Podcast Network.